For the last 13 visits that I've had with Coast since and also Dreamland since 1999, I have described the Roswell ship as being a metal crystalline vehicle that was grown in layers to resemble something between the cross between a doll's porpoise and a stingray, that had a delta or a wave rider type configuration similar to some of the spy planes that you've seen out of Skunk Works, with inward canted horizontal or inward canted vertical stabilizers at approximately 30 degrees that resembled the dorsal fins of either the poor beagle shark or the doll's porpoise. And this neat little flying surfboard, if you will, could slam its way through the atmosphere, riding its own shockwave, and it could morph, and it had something called morphable camber instead of flaps and rudders. And it could adjust its wing form in the way layers of muscles within the wing of a bird, such as an albatross, adjust the wing camber that allows them to glide for literally hours. The ship could dive into the ocean and fly out again. Its main propulsion, its engine, if you will, was actually the outer skin of the vehicle. It was in a denser atmosphere. Its mode of flight was magneto-aero-electrodynamics, which is similar to magneto-hydrodynamics, which is like the caterpillar drive that you've heard of in top-secret nuclear submarines.
Boy, that's an awful lot of detail you're giving me. Now down to the exact type of drive it had. That's incredible. I guess I have to stop and ask, when you get down to this, I could understand observer detail with regard, for example, to the shape of the craft. That's easy to understand. But now you're getting down to some of the technical details of the kind of drive it had. Where does that information come from?
Well, the information came from a variety of sources. From 1983 to 1990, Kelly Johnson, who was the former CEO and the creator of the Lockheed Martin Skunk Works, passed that information to his hand-picked successor, Dr. Ben R. Rich. Dr. Rich and Kelly Johnson also conveyed the information conversationally to Air Force scientist Dr. Robert I. Saubacher and to Tester Corporation Chief Model Kit Designer John Andrews, who had been one of only two men that was taken under Kelly Johnson's wing.
But the assumption, of course, would have to be that to have that kind of intimate knowledge means that we do have the craft, that we have back-engineered the craft to the point where we understand this kind of detail about the energy systems used.
Yes, absolutely, with the former and somewhat with the latter. The information I have is that no backwards engineering program has ever been 100% successful. There's still a lot that they don't understand. But what we have learned, and what I'm going to be conveying tonight, is that human technology, with or without aliens art, is rushing in its evolution, along with the evolution of people themselves, toward what can best be described as a codependent and interdependent interface that will be an absolute requirement for the future survival of both the organic system users, which is us, and our advanced machine systems technology, and, you know, hopefully artificial intelligence and artificial life will be a goal here, but it will never be able to exist without the interface between the organic brain, which is a stabilizing factor, maybe a soul, if you will, and the machine systems that are rushing to match our brains in complexity.
The integration of man and machine. Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yes.
Listen, did you by any chance hear my first hour?
I was listening on the radio and I turned it off just before you called.
I read a message that purportedly, well, was in fact on the BBC. It took over the BBC, and apparently I guess it was big headlines in Europe, not here, but there was this message that I read. I guess you heard it, and I don't know. What do you think?
Well, it has some commonality with what the Ashtar commandos were trying to tell me back in the early 1990s when their message was so urgent. Aurora and Michael L. Legion and a bunch of these other folks that had these urgent, urgent messages. I believe, and I'm not being, you know, a wise guy when I say this, that there is some universal truth and some philosophical metaphor in these particular kinds of claims that have some actual bearing or actual truth in the reality of our existence and the direction of our evolution. At the same time, it fits into the kind of mythology that our culture has. This is like the mythology that a lot of other cultures have had that preceded ours. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, UFOs and aliens are part of the mythology and the culture that future anthropologists will apply to our society, the way we apply the Greek gods and goddesses to Greece, the Roman gods and goddess analogs to Rome, and the humanoid gods and goddesses to ancient Sumer and ancient Egypt.
Well, here's a pedestrian question for you. You described a very advanced craft that would put anything we've got in the air, even perhaps today, to shame.
Absolutely.
Well, then why the damn thing crash?
Well, my best information was that it was weather, that it was nature, that Mother Nature can humble any advanced species, not just us. I mean, I live right here by Falcon Field, and we just had an airplane crash because of wind shear yesterday at the air show. And it was tragic. We got a pilot that's dead and a passenger is in the hospital.
Your question is a legitimate one, or what you proffered as a possibility for the crash. Do we know anything about the weather conditions in that area of New Mexico?
Oh, absolutely. It was severe monsoonal thunderstorms.
Oh, really?
During that evening.
Really? Is that right?
Severe monsoonal thunderstorms that night. All witnesses described severe monsoonal thunderstorms.
Uh-huh. Well, you're right. There certainly would be severe downdrafts associated with that.
But it was lightning, an upstroke of lightning from the ground into the clouds that struck the ship.
Uh-huh.
That caused the upper port side dorsal section of where the hull blends into the wing,
yes,
to shatter and disintegrate, causing the internal fluids of the vehicle to start to spray out, sucking at least two of the seven flight crew members out at altitude. But because the thing had multiple mode drives and had force fields, as it fell out of the sky, it put up these force fields. These force fields caused its weight to go to zero, but its mass to go to infinity. When it hit the ground, it hit with the force of a bulldozer, a caterpillar bulldozer falling from 30,000 feet, causing a big gouge in the ground. And yet, four men were able to pull it out of the cliff the next day. Men who were MPs under the direction of atom bomb security agents known as the United States Army Counterintelligence Corps.